From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas, filling in for John Horn. John is in Las Vegas at CinemaCon. We'll get his report on the latest news, including AMC Theater's controversial expansion into Saudi Arabia. And then a visit to the LA Public Library partly inspired the new film directed by Emilio Estevez that explores America's homeless crisis.
Libraries have been turned into de facto homeless shelters. And so librarians are now tasked with being first responders and de facto social workers.
And the TV series Fresh Off the Boat hits a landmark 100 episodes. All that coming up on The Frame. Welcome to The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas, filling in for John Horn. He's in Las Vegas right now at CinemaCon, the big annual convention of theater owners and film studios. Earlier today, John spoke with John Fithian, head of the National Association of Theater Owners, but we began our conversation talking about actress Helen Mirren and her onstage viral moment from earlier this week.
What Helen Mirren said was, and I'll quote it directly, "I love Netflix, but F Netflix. There is nothing like sitting in the cinema." So a lot of what's happening at CinemaCon are theater owners hearing distributors, Paramount, Warner Brothers, Universal, say, "We want our movies to play in theaters. That's where they belong. And when they end up on a streaming service, it will be well after you guys have had them." Mm-hmm. What Helen Mirren was saying was the same thing, which is basically, "I want this film," her movie was called The Good Liar, "to be seen in a theater. And that's where it should be seen first. And then whatever happens down the line is fine."
Mm-hmm. Well, AMC CEO Adam Aaron had news about expanding into Saudi Arabia. And this is following the murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. AMC was quiet about their plans to expand. But what did Aaron have to say at CinemaCon?
Apparently, AMC is not the only company that is considering building theaters in Saudi Arabia. Essentially, their argument is, "We thought a lot about what was the right thing to do. And I'm quoting Aaron now, after a lot of reflection, we decided to move ahead." And John Fithian, who is the head of the National Association of Theater Owners, wouldn't tell me at all about what NATO thinks about Saudi Arabia. But he did say during an earlier press briefing that movies have been a sword of freedom for a very long time. So I think the way that the theater owners are looking at it is that they can bring democracy to Saudi Arabia through movies. I guess there are going to be a lot of people, and I think there might be some filmmakers who would say, "I don't want to support the regime. I don't want my movies playing there." One of Hollywood's biggest talent agencies, WME, it's actually returned money that was invested in the agency from Saudi Arabia. And it's not just because of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. It's about the way they treat women. It's about the way that people don't have a lot of democratic rights. So it's going to be an interesting debate. Theater owners are trying to grow their business, and there are not a lot of markets where they haven't been able to go. So it could be Saudi Arabia today and North Korea tomorrow.
Well, I understand that at the AMC theaters in Saudi Arabia that men and women will be allowed to sit together. Was that something that the deal hinged on for AMC to do business in the country?
I think that was clearly a big factor. I mean, the other factor is going to be censorship, like whether or not Saudi Arabia as a country will allow a broad array of content in to be exhibited. And I think that's going to be just as big a question as who actually gets into the theaters to watch movies.
Well, we know you talked to National Association of Theater Owners Chief John Fithian earlier today. Did he or did Adam Aaron have anything to say about this Variety investigation that exposed alleged labor abuses at large theater chains, including AMC?
I actually asked John Fithian about it this morning, and he said, as the kind of trade organization for theater owners, he didn't know about the issue until he read the Variety story, and he said that there is ongoing litigation which would prevent him from talking about it more specifically. I think the theater owners that I've heard and some have talked kind of on background, off the record, recognize that it's a huge problem. I think the issue is both of what is right and what is the perception. And obviously, it is not right to take advantage of your workforce, to have wage theft, not pay people overtime. There are a lot of issues that that story raised. The other one is like the perception of wanting to make sure that when people go to a movie theater, that they are patronizing a business that is doing things the right way. So even though the National Association of Theater Owners didn't know about this issue, and they're not saying what they're going to do, I am sure that they'll be working with theater owners to make sure that they are abiding by, you know, fair labor practices, because that certainly is not something they want to have hanging over their heads.
Well, let's talk movies. There's been a lot of trailers, a lot of footage that people are talking about. Social media was buzzing about the Joker trailer. There's new Lion King footage. What's impressed you?
So the Joker is a origin story about the Joker. It's directed by Todd Phillips, who is probably best known for the Hangover movies. They showed some footage from it with Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker.
My mother always tells me to smile and put on a happy face. She told me I had a purpose to bring laughter and joy to the world.
Todd Phillips said in describing the movie, it's a tragedy, not an action film, not a comedy. And it looked very dark and very disturbing. And I think for theater owners who don't really know what that movie is about, it's a really good way to kind of seed the clouds and get people interested in it. Amazon last night showed its movie Late Night, which is Emma Thompson and Mindy Kaling. It's a movie that played at the Sundance Film Festival. They played it to about 2,000 exhibitors, and I heard secondhand that a number of exhibitors saw it and said, we want to book that movie. That looks like a crowd-pleasing film that would be good for our theaters. So you have, you know, movies like Avengers on the one hand, and then you have a movie like Late Night, where a screening or even some footage of another film can open exhibitors' eyes to the possibility that this movie is interesting and good, and it's worth booking.
And John, what are you going to be up to today?
We have a couple more presentations. Paramount is going to present some of its content. We don't really know what they're up to. That studio has been in a little bit of turmoil lately. Lionsgate, which is the maker of The Long Shot, is going to show some footage from a Hellboy. I don't know if it's a remake, a spinoff, a reboot, whatever you want to call it. They're also going to be showing some footage from John Wick. I think we're up to the third John Wick movie. And then, I don't know, I'll probably go check out some concessions, get some red vines, and then I'm going to head back to Pasadena.
Sounds fun, John. Well, we look forward to seeing you back tomorrow.
Take care, Steve. Thanks.
Coming up on The Frame, The Public, directed by Emilio Estevez, is a new film that librarians are saying is long overdue. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas, in for John Horn. Thanks for joining us. Portrayals of homeless people in film have not always been the most sympathetic. Oftentimes, they're reduced to one-dimensional characters, hopeless drunks or unstable and violent. But the new film, The Public, explores the many reasons an ordinary person may end up on the street and why it can be so tough to get off. The film revolves around a group of homeless men who stage an Occupy-style sit-in at a public library and the librarians who help them. The Public was written and directed by Emilio Estevez. He also stars in the film. And he says interactions he observed between librarians and homeless patrons at LA's Central Library partly inspired The Public. When I spoke with Estevez earlier this week, he also mentioned an op-ed that he read in the LA Times written by Chip Ward, the former assistant director of the Salt Lake City Public Library.
What the essay was about, essentially, was about how libraries have been turned into de facto homeless shelters, and how librarians are now tasked with being first responders and de facto social workers. And so I was moved by the piece. And what Chip also talked about is this wasn't localized to just what was happening in Salt Lake City, but it was national. It was a crisis. And I'd done the bulk of my research for the film right before that called Bobby, down at the central branch of LAPL.
Right.
So I knew what Chip Ward was talking about to a certain extent, but I needed to go back to the library and see if what he was talking about was also happening in our own city. And sure enough, it was. And so after a couple of days sort of wandering around the library again and getting reacquainted with it, I began to envision a story of what would happen if the patrons, most of whom are homeless and suffering from some mental health issues, what if they decided to stage an old-fashioned sit-in? How would the the law enforcement react to that? How would the media react?
Mm-hmm.
Would they spin it to their own for their own gain? How would if a politician was in the middle of an election cycle, how would they use this as an opportunity to shift the narrative?
Well, in 1987, your father, Martin Sheen, and a very well-known homeless advocate named Mitch Schneider, they were arrested after they staged
That's
a
right.
protest that kind of echoes what happens in the public. So I guess that event may have stuck with you all these years as well?
Well, perhaps. And I had an opportunity to meet Mitch Schneider before he unfortunately took his own life.
Yeah.
And he was a very committed individual, obviously. Very passionate about the issue of homelessness, and trying to bring awareness to it. And homelessness is an issue that has not been with us that long. We're really talking about 40 years, and I think what Mitch was trying to the work that he was doing is the work that certainly my father continued on, and I'm I'd like to say in some small measure. The work of this film.
Well, let's hear a scene from early on in The Public, and it's when your character, Stuart Goodson, offers some cash to one of the homeless men, Jackson, played by Michael K. Williams.
Look, Jackson. So use it to get some food, maybe a room.
You're gonna offer me money and then tell me what to do with it?
Well, no, I was just suggesting a few things that I thought you might need, is all.
How do you know what I need?
Well, that's a scene from The Public written and directed by and starring my guest Emilio Estevez. So, Emilio, tell me about writing that scene, because I think it gets at the clumsy way that people, well-intentioned as they may be, the clumsy way they sometimes try to help a homeless
of
individual.
Of course. And I, you know, listen, I can only speak for myself, but I've seen other people make the same mistake where you offer money but it's conditional,
yeah.
Right? You want to know that your money's not being spent on alcohol or drugs. You know
right.
what? That's none of our business.
Right.
Once you give the money away, you have to give it away freely. So, and I do. I've got to park my judgment at the door, and I've got to park my bias at the door when being in a situation where you are going to give.
The film really gets at many of the issues that are at the root of homelessness: drug addiction, poverty, loss of a job, also mental illness. And there's one character named Big George. He's played by the rapper and activist Rhymefest. Can you tell me about casting Rhymefest in that part and how you two shaped the character of Big George?
Sure. Now that I have to give credit to my mother. My mom saw a documentary called In My Father's House, which was the story about how Rhymefest reconnected with his father, who had been on the street and homeless for 30 years.
Oh.
And the only place that when his father agreed to meet, finally, the only place his father felt comfortable meeting his son was at the local public library.
Wow.
That's where he felt he had community. And so they met. This film was made about that. My mother saw the documentary and mm-hmm. called me and said, listen, I know you don't listen. You don't want to take my advice often, and you don't want to listen to what I have to say. She says, but you have to put this gentleman on your radar. He could be a valuable asset. And so I reached out to Che. I asked him, if he would be interested in acting, as he had never acted before, and he was game. And I thought it was very important to have somebody with lived experience participating in the film.
Well, let's hear a scene from The Public starring Rhymefest, and it's when the character of Caesar goes missing, and Big George says he killed him. And the first voice we hear is your character, the head librarian, Stuart.
What do you mean you killed him?
I killed him with my laser eyes. See, the government, they put this weapon in my head when I was a baby. It's a laser. It kills people when I look at them for too long. It's a chip. They put in a lot of babies when they're born. And that's why I don't want to look at any of you for so long.
Emilio, as someone who's done a fair amount of reporting on homelessness, I've had those conversations. And
of course.
And I have to tell you, I thought that scene just rang so true and is so heartbreaking, though it does end with some laughs in the scene. Can you tell me what inspired your writing in that scene?
So without divulging too much, I had a partner in my life whose brother was diagnosed schizoaffective. And so for many years, he would go on and off his medication. And oftentimes the voices were too loud for him to bear. And oftentimes he would be taken away by the police and had the be held for 72 hours. And I watched what that did to the entire family.
Well, the film also gets at the criminalization of the homeless, and some might say the over-criminalization of the homeless.
That's right. There's a scene specifically about arrests for jaywalking.
Yes, yes.
And now you have fines that you cannot pay, and now you're actually spending months in jail because of the fines. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but we see this happening, the criminalization of the poor, of the marginalized. You know, this began... Homelessness began really in the 80s after Carter signed the Mental Health Services Act, which was then undone by the following administration. HUD was gutted by 77%, and it began to unravel after that, and got us to this place where we're at right now. And so people who have fallen through the cracks, we now criminalize for falling through the cracks.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, Emilio, Hollywood's not always done the best job portraying homeless people.
That's right.
I'm wondering if you looked back at all at prior depictions of the homeless in TV and film for examples of what not to do.
Sure, I did. And there was, and there's been some criticism about how they're portrayed in this film. But I believe that what I've done with the film is put a name and a face, and I've humanized those individuals experiencing homelessness in this film in a way that other films haven't. This is not we've not stereotyped any of the individuals in this film. Librarians will tell you that. We've screened the film now across the country at libraries for homeless advocacy groups and for individuals experiencing homelessness. And they have all seen themselves on screen, and they've seen themselves empowered and in heroic roles. We took the film to New Orleans to screen for librarians at the ALA conference.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there were over the course of a weekend, about 3,000 librarians came to the screening. But the first one, I thought, okay, they laughed. They seemed to get it. They're applauding at the end, but now here it comes. And I stood in front of what I thought was going to be a firing squad. And they, the first question that came out of the group at this screening was, how did you get us so right? And I breathed a sigh of relief. And I thought, okay, if we stick the landing with librarians, if we stick the landing with homeless individuals and with those who advocate for them, then I think we're doing okay.
Emilio Estevez is the writer, director, and stars in the film The Public, which is in theaters this Friday. Emilio, it was such a pleasure, and thanks for joining us, and thanks for making this film.
Thank you so much.
Coming up on The Frame, Fresh Off the Boat, it's a landmark for a TV series centered on an Asian American family. This Friday, the ABC family comedy Fresh Off the Boat will air its 100th episode. It's a historic first for a show with an Asian American lead cast. It's hard for Asian Americans to even get cast in a series. A 2017 report found they make up just 4% of main cast members on shows. But even the cast of Fresh Off the Boat may not be safe. ABC has yet to announce renewal plans. KPCC's Josie Wong visited the set to hear about where the show's been and where it might be headed.
On a soundstage in Century City, the Huang family of Fresh Off the Boat is having a situation. A foreign exchange student is staying with them and driving everyone crazy.
All she does is shower and bake cakes. I gained 10 pounds. 10 dirty pounds.
That's Randall Park. For 5 years now, he's inhabited the role of good-natured family man Louis Huang. The character, an immigrant from Taiwan, moves the wife and kids to Orlando so he can open a Western-themed steakhouse.
I feel like Lewis has kind of become a part of me. I've become a lot more of a positive person.
But Park was feeling anything but positive when he filmed the pilot. It's a long shot for any pilot to get greenlit to series. Park knew he had already shot 8 or so failed pilots. There was also this consideration.
There was an Asian American family on TV, and at the time there was nothing like that.
They'll cast Asian Americans, but always in like the second, third, fourth lead to support somebody else's story.
That's Constance Wu, who plays Jessica Huang, the mom.
It was a diversity checkmark rather than understanding that diversity isn't just skin deep. It's representation. It's your story.
The last time an Asian American family was on a major network show was All American Girl in 1994, starring Margaret Cho.
Margaret, do you know why I encourage your brother to become a cardiologist?
No.
Because I always knew that one day you'd give me a heart attack. What are you wearing?
Critics and audiences alike rejected the show, and ABC canned it after one season. 2 decades later, though, the network was in a different place. It was enjoying the success of shows like Shonda Rhimes' Scandal and treating diversity as a mission statement.
One of the things I'll never forget is that they were like, we will actually put this show on the air.
Ninochka Khan created Fresh Off the Boat. She says former ABC executives Paul Lee and Sammy Falvey were big cheerleaders.
Whatever internal thing that they had going on at ABC at the time, they were committed to that. And they put their money where their mouth was, basically.
Fresh Off the Boat debuted February 2015 with all the trappings of a traditional sitcom. Pratfalls, misunderstandings, tidy endings. At the same time, it's unlike most other sitcoms. For one, the grandmother Huang character deadpans in Mandarin.
好吧,继续生我的气吧.
There's the nod to Asian American viewers, like when Dad teaches young Eddie how to avoid Asian glow when drinking.
Before I drink, I take these precautions and it lessens the side effects. Pepcid, inhaler, eye drops, Tums.
You have to do all this nonsense every time you drink?
I don't write checks my body can't cash.
The show writers also tackle issues around race and immigration. One season-long arc has the mom, Jessica, seeking U.S. citizenship.
I, Jessica, take you, the United States of America, as my lawfully wedded country.
Not everyone has been a fan. Eddie Huang, the vice personality and celebrity chef whose memoir serves as the basis for the show, complained the series watered down his story and the Asian immigrant experience. But that hasn't dimmed the excitement of Asian Americans looking for wider representation on screen.
You start to see that Asian Americans aren't just one-dimensional.
Sociologist Nancy Wong-Yoon said that while some Asian Americans have been leads on shows, think Mindy Kaling, Sandra Oh, a majority Asian American cast is a different animal. On Fresh Off the Boat, one brother is obsessed with hip-hop. Another is sporty and popular. The youngest is precocious and brainy.
You cannot lump all Asians, even all Chinese, into one archetype, right? That there is variation. There's also different looks, different types. I mean, all those things disappear when you have just the one geeky tech guy on a crime procedural show.
So it seemed like an embarrassment of riches when the same year Fresh Off the Boat debuted, ABC premiered a second sitcom with an Asian American family, Dr. Ken, starring Ken Jeong.
Dr. Ken Park, MD. Just want to say sub, you know.
Weak ratings, though, led to Dr. Ken's demise in 2017. And over time, ratings for Fresh Off the Boat, they softened too. By the end of its fourth season, the show's future looked shaky. Randall Park made a playful plea to ABC in this video.
Picture me on my knees. Please renew our show.
So the show did end up getting a fifth season, but it was moved to the broadcast equivalent of a retirement home, Friday nights. Khan was unfazed.
Well, I was excited that we got more episodes, honestly.
And she was confident that audiences would find the show on its new night or stream episodes on their own timetable. But ratings have continued to fall, and Fresh Off the Boat finds itself on the bubble yet again. Should it be canceled, Asian American representation on TV would take a huge hit, though maybe not as huge as it would have been if this hadn't happened.
Rachel, these people aren't just rich, okay? They're crazy rich. Look.
Crazy Rich Asians, the blockbuster rom-com, which also stars Constance Wu, showed how bankable an all-Asian cast can be. Now, several TV series about Asian American families are in the works. One from Comedy Central is a vehicle for Awkwafina, also of Crazy Rich Asians fame, about growing up in Queens with her dad and grandmother. Back on the Fresh Off the Boat set, Park envisions a TV universe with multiple Asian American families, including the Huangs of Fresh Off the Boat. If the show isn't picked up again...
Of course, I'll be sad, but I'll also like look back and be very proud of what we've done. You know, like we've kind of did something great, and that's cause for celebration.
And whatever happens, Fresh Off the Boat already has a cable syndication deal. And now that they'll have more than 100 episodes to go into repeats, the Huangs won't be leaving us anytime soon. For The Frame, I'm Josie Huang.
And that's The Frame for today. You can always get this show as a podcast. It's available for download or streaming everywhere you like to listen. I'm Stephen Cuevas. Thanks for listening. John will be back here tomorrow.